Hello, this is Brian Cam, and you are listening to Clear Story. And today I want to talk about voice notes. And in particular, I want to talk about a WhatsApp group that I formed and that seven other friends joined me on to record what are called creative quandaries. The group is called Creative Quandary Clinic. And I am going to be talking more about that group, how I came up with the idea, and also in this episode, other people from that very same group will be submitting other voice notes. So basically, I'm recording this now as a voice note, and other people in this group are going to respond with voice notes. And what you listen to today as a podcast will be just those concatenated voice notes. So bear in mind, these are unrehearsed and unwritten. I am speaking with my eyes closed right now and don't quite know what I'm going to say. And that is because I am interested in one aspect of voice notes, which is a kind of act of self-discovery that goes on past a few minutes. And there are other aspects of voice notes too that interest me. But the first one is that we don't quite know where a voice note is going to go. And so when we start speaking, we think we roughly know what we're going to say. But after a few minutes, if you've left any voice notes over, you know, 2-3 minutes, you may find yourself thinking, huh, I didn't actually expect to go there. So this act of kind of self-discovery, then, because it's sent to someone else, assuming you don't cancel the voice note, becomes an act of sort of self-disclosure. And these two things I think are really interesting about voice notes. One, that we don't know exactly what we're going to say going in, because we kind of can't. I mean, of course, we could write it out and rehearse it. And, you know, I've heard some people say that they do this, but in general, it's a kind of on-the-go format where you are trying to express something, you hit record, and then you send the kind of messy, unedited first draft. Now, there are times, I know, that people cancel them, re-record, etc., or they get interrupted, etc. But in general, I'm interested in the kind of unfiltered way that voice notes develop, because it can give quite an insightful view of how someone's sort of thought process works, if that makes sense, because it's almost like you end up monologuing along with them. Like you can see after a few minutes how their thoughts develop, what they think is linked, where their mind goes in certain contexts. And it's relatively unfiltered because uninterrupted. So that's another aspect of voice notes that I'm really interested in, is that they are basically not rehearsed and unfiltered, and we don't know exactly where they're going to go. And now I feel like I'm kind of repeating myself, but I'm going to persist because I don't want this to be a perfect rehearsed voice note. Okay, so what are the other aspects of voice notes that I'm interested in? One is also the high cost of canceling or editing. So just like when you're writing a letter, you don't know exactly where it's going to go. And if you write a page that you decide you don't like, you could, you know, delete that page, cross things out, etc. But it's not like a text where now increasingly on these message platforms, you can kind of just delete a text. But even in an email, before you hit send, and now that there's a sort of undo feature in many email clients, even after you hit send, you have a chance to be like, you know, this paragraph in the middle that was kind of passive aggressive, or, you know, where I talked about this thing that is not that relevant, I'm just going to delete it. Now, in a voice note, I don't know of anyone who actually goes into an audio file and edits voice notes. So for me, there is a kind of unedited quality. And some people do pause them and continue them. And yeah, I guess I should also just give some background backing up a little further as to how I got interested in them in the first place. Basically, in 2020, I had someone who is now a friend, but at that time was just a kind of person I knew vaguely on Twitter and through Interintellect Salons, which was like a Zoom intellectual events that were happening during the first lockdown. And I asked her about an album she was working on. And rather than responding to me in a Twitter DM, I think I DM'd her on Twitter, basically sending a text back, she said, yes, would love to talk to you about that, but can I do it via voice note? And I was like, oh, interesting. This is a format. I don't think I'd ever received a voice note at that point. I'm not even sure that I really knew that WhatsApp could do this, or Telegram or Signal, which are both, we might refer to Telegram occasionally because I've also made some bots that use voice notes, but it's very similar to WhatsApp if you've not used Telegram. And so basically, this person and I became quite close friends through voice notes. And this was a pattern that kept happening, which is that I got to know people a little bit online through salons or through, you know, Twitter. And then we would end up somehow with each other's numbers, basically maybe texting a little bit, and then it would switch to voice notes. And I found that voice notes, in part because of this self-disclosure thing, mean that you really get to know someone quite quickly if you can persevere through it. When I looked a year or so ago, there's very little written on voice notes. A lot of it was basically, oh, isn't it annoying that there's this logistical detail in a voice note and there's no transcript? So basically you can't see what they said. Or isn't it great how you get the tone in a voice note? And I do think the tone is really important. I think a lot of fights and conflicts and misunderstandings happen over text due not to the exact words that are used, but to the perceived tone of what is being said. I certainly am somehow on the defensive receiving texts, and I take them the wrong way sometimes. And I find that voice notes can quickly diffuse situations that might otherwise escalate, and they can also just prevent issues of misunderstanding happening in the first place. Texts are, of course, great for logistical details because it says, you know, let's meet at 7 p.m. at this place, and that's very annoying to find, especially in a very long voice note of exactly what someone said. So there's a kind of conceptual element where in a text, it's better for concepts. It's durable. You can very quickly refer to it. But for anything beyond a simple text, for me, voice notes tend to be preferable. Now, they're also time consuming, and I know that people object to them for that reason. Sometimes I've received voice notes that have hit the WhatsApp limit, which is 30 minutes. And I've also sent some that are 20 plus minutes, certainly. I don't think maybe once I hit the 30 minute limit, but if you're thinking this sounds terrible, it's interesting. I have friends who, I just think that really interesting things can happen in them, and that, you know, for example, you wouldn't think twice about listening to a 20 or 30 minute podcast. Now, not every voice note is podcast quality, you might say, but to me, there is something live, contextual. You can hear where someone is. Quite often, they're recorded while people are moving about or in their natural environment. There's other things going on. They can get interrupted. They can get, you know, you just get a lot more bandwidth in that sense, not just the tone, but also the context. And to me, that is also kind of amazing because I could send the same text from halfway through a gig or, you know, from my bed, and you'll get the text and you won't know any of that. Whereas if I record you a voice note, you'll be able to hear all the kind of background stuff. And I also think that there are just very few contexts in which we get to reflect without interruptions, and we get to be heard in a context that's actually chosen by the listener, right? So this is a bit like letter writing, more so than texts. I find that, you know, I send a text to someone, quite often they'll see it immediately or nearly immediately, and they will have it in that context. Now, a letter could arrive and stay in a stack of mail until I have, you know, an hour or whatever it takes. Maybe it's not an hour, maybe it's even just 20 minutes or something, where I'm like, okay, I'm in this good spot and I can receive this letter openly. To me, voice notes are a little bit like that because you can choose when to listen to them. And so rather than a text, and I know this is also kind of annoying for some people because, you know, you receive a 4-minute voice note and you are trying to meet someone or whatever. It's like, why couldn't you just send a text? I'm kind of not talking so much about those kind of voice notes and more about voice notes about what's really going on in someone's life. And that, because the listener gets to choose a good time and a good context to receive that voice note and respond to that voice note, and it may not be immediate, to me that also makes it more like physical letter writing. And again, more like physical letter writing than email, because you can't easily edit voice notes. Okay, I think that those are all my main thoughts on voice notes. And now I want to talk about the Creative Quandary Clinic, which started in December and ran for 2 months. Basically, this was just a WhatsApp group where I added 7 other friends who actually I got them to add themselves, and I explained the format to them. And this was the format. We had the 8 people in the group. Then I randomized the list of people in that group, including myself. And each week on a Thursday, we had pre-committed to one person is going to ask a question and everyone else is going to respond on that Thursday. So basically, you know, let's say it's your week, it's Thursday morning, you wake up, you get to ask a question via voice note of 5 minutes-ish. We didn't set any strict limits, but we kind of gave a suggested 5-minute recording prompt. And so, you know, you could ask what we called a creative quandary, so relating to a creative project you're working on. But it was also, we were flexible about that and basically said, if you're having an existential quandary or any other kind of life question, all questions are welcome. But I suppose there's a kind of loose organization of the group in terms of people that are working on creative projects. So on your week, you would record a 5-minute voice note, and then the other 7 participants would send suggested 10 minutes back. So if everyone sent exactly 10 minutes, then you would get 70 minutes of answers from people who are quite different, working on completely different things in different contexts, in different parts of the world at one point. And well, I think maybe not this second, but we had a sort of 14-hour time zone spread. And so it has been a really interesting experience. But basically, just to say a little bit more about the format. So each week was a 15-minute time commitment, right? So basically, I committed to listening to every 5-minute question, and then I committed to a 10-ish minute response. I did not commit to listening to the other responses necessarily, although I personally did do that and found them fascinating and really, yeah, meaningful in a way to hear such different voices respond to different questions. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is that although there's these sort of guidelines around it, there's no real technology involved apart from just setting up a WhatsApp group, which I think we're all in WhatsApp groups, but I haven't seen, at least that I haven't experienced this kind of format of different people communicating primarily through voice notes until I started this experiment. I did start another book club that's supposed to use voice notes. We're reading Tanya Lerman's not When God Talks Back. That was her earlier book, How God Becomes Real. And that is also a fascinating kind of experience, but I won't talk about that this time. What I'll talk about instead is just what emerged, because of the eight participants in this group, some of whom you will hear from in this podcast, not everyone knew each other. And there was some skepticism at first about whether we would truly be able to connect this way, as opposed to doing it on a Zoom call. And so partly because of the time zone issue, and I have a lot of kind of ongoing scheduled things in my life, and I find it very difficult to propose and, find times for people to meet real time, I thought maybe this voice note thing would give us much of the connection that we wanted without the admin of a weekly Zoom call. And, if you're busy on a week, you can still be a full participant in this experiment of the Creative Quandary Clinic, but with just a 15-minute commitment. Now, what emerged, I think, was quite special. And the feedback that I've gotten from other participants was that it really made a difference in the creative projects that they were working on. I certainly felt that. My question was about overcoming sort of fear to do with sharing writing. And so at the time, I think I was writing, it was either the On Imitation piece that I put on Substack, or perhaps it was the Dichotomies 1 piece. And these are on briancam.substack.com, in case you're interested. And I had very great fears about putting those up, but I'm trying to overcome them. And I shared those fears with the group and kind of asked them how they dealt with this issue of silence after a performance, something like that. Because when you post writing on the internet, there's not any great fanfare. When you post a podcast on the internet, there's not any great fanfare. Not that there needs to be fanfare, but if you're in a room where you give a speech, for example, even if it went pretty badly, you're going to at least get some kind of acknowledgement that it's like, okay, you spoke. You might not get a standing ovation, but people will acknowledge that happened. Whereas on the internet, this is not a thing, right? There's no one to say well done or anything. You might get likes, but especially with long form writing or podcasts, those likes are very delayed from the actual experience of releasing it, right? Especially if you have to edit it, et cetera. You've written this thing, you like it, then it goes through these rounds of editing, et cetera, and it gets put out there. Okay, I'm going on too long about my own part of the experiment, and I just wanted to thank the other participants in this group because it really made me feel less alone in what I was doing. It made me feel seen and heard in a way that I hadn't expected. And, I obviously had some expectation that it might do something like this, but I also had big fears that it would just not work in some way. And it did work from my point of view. And I'm very excited to hear how other participants want to describe the experience, because basically we just did 2 months, 8 people = 8 weeks = 2 months. And so each Thursday, one of those people asked a question that was something they were working on, struggling with, et cetera, and got over an hour of responses from people who might have dealt with that very problem or might have never dealt with that very problem. It was quite a diverse group. I realize I'm not really saying too much about the other participants, and that's partly because I want them to feel like they can describe their own experience and introduce themselves in whatever way they wish. And so with that, I am going to stop talking. I have now sent you a 20-minute voice note. And so if you hate voice notes, I apologize for doing that. But thank you for listening. And yeah, I really look forward to hearing from the other participants in this group. And I would love to hear from any of the listeners. So, yeah, Thank you all for listening, for getting in touch. It really means a lot to me.
Hello, this is Isabella Granick, and I was one of the participants in the Creative Quandary Clinic. And I am normally a person who deeply values intellectual work, and certainly books are the main place that I go to for information, or I guess online, also texts. For information, for advice, for ways of living my own life and also building experiences or technologies for other people. So my kind of day job for a long time was a professor in developmental psychology, and my research was on the mental health of young people and how to build technologies with and for young people that would help them flourish and build emotional resilience, prevent anxiety and depression, and so on. And so my general go-to way of building anything that might be useful for other people is to go into the scientific literature and find strategies that have worked for other people or have been empirically, you know, validated or supported through various contexts and in different disciplines. And so this was an incredibly unique experience because instead of going to this sort of these texts that have been vetted and peer reviewed and so on, I had this opportunity to source from real life live people in really different contexts coming from very different backgrounds. All dealing with very different creative projects. And so just the experience of being able to ask of these incredibly diverse, smart, engaged people how they would deal with a problem that I was struggling with, I thought was just a magnificent kind of experiment. My quandary that I shared with everyone was about intuition and how we build intuition and how we can trust our intuition. And given that it's supposed to be something that is sort of based on our gut experience or our gut feelings, how can that be a valid way to feel comfortable making a decision, given that these intuitions are often based on developmental histories and our past patterns and all the sorts of things that we've selected over our lifetime to read or engage with. And so, of course, those things have biases themselves. So it felt really difficult to imagine trusting some kind of intuition as if it was some golden standard of information that was superior to kind of conceptual texts out there or something like that. And I got incredibly thoughtful, deeply considered reflections from people that, you know, were in the arts or in science or design. And each person offered their own incredible experience for me to reflect on. And absolutely each and every one of those responses was so valuable and also so very, very unique. And so just on a more general level, the reason why I felt this experience was so incredibly valuable, I don't know, there's many reasons. One of them is that just this ability to monologue like I'm doing right now. On the one hand, you know, the first time I did these kinds of voice notes, I felt incredibly self-conscious and worried about impression management and how to be articulate and how to show up spontaneously without notes or without planning, which just goes against everything that I've been trained in. And to do that and consistently to do that was a real challenge for me. But by by showing up for that challenge over and over again, I learned miraculously to some degree how to trust my own, I guess, intuitions and my own sort of thought processes that came out in real time. A lot of the times as I would speak or leave these messages for other people, I felt like I was struggling myself to come up with the best answers that I could to serve the person who had asked the question. And I often surprised myself with what I shared or what felt most relevant or alive at that moment. And so there was this process of real kind of self-exploration as much as it was an experience of trying to share and help someone else. And what an incredible privilege that was to know that somebody was going to listen to my experience and find it valuable in some way. And so one of the things that felt like all of us were doing was trying to elevate our own kind of sharing with unique experiences. I felt like everyone there reached for some kind of personal experience that was there uniquely to help somebody else. And it feels very rare that we get that opportunity to share our experience and know that somebody else is going to take it so very seriously. And so there was a sense of being felt and heard and seen and understood in a way that's really rarely, for me, felt in such a kind of strong way. The monologue format also just had this sense where you knew somebody was going to listen through and listen deeply to what you were saying. And so often we're interrupted or there are tangents in a conversation in real time that take away from something you want to share that's like at the core. And sometimes it takes you quite a while to get to that core. It feels like right now I'm doing the same thing as trying to get to the main point of what I'm saying. And so to have people there to witness that and be patient with that and trust that you'll get to that just felt really, really amazing and unique. There was also this kind of magic and potential for serendipity. So when I both listened to other people's experience that they shared and also when I left my own messages for other people, oftentimes I was taking a walk or I was, at home in a different type of context and so on. And there would be elements in my context that would trigger a certain type of thought or a pathway of advice or experience that I wouldn't have otherwise had. So there was this very embodied sense of sharing with other people that felt so relevant and alive in the very moment. In these voice notes, sound mixes with movement, and my old neighborhood felt different even when I was leaving these messages because they were alive with all these other people's sort of presence in a way that felt, again, really unique. I've been thinking a little bit about what made this experience so memorable and valuable. And one of the things I think that this Creative Quandary Clinic had is it's one of the conditions where we would have to show up regularly once a week to leave our message for somebody else, our experience addressing another quandary. And this kind of ritualized weekly regular coming together for this task just took on its own sort of energy and meaning, and it felt important, and it felt like the returning back to that intention really mattered. And again, it felt like this ritual that became more and more important as the weeks went by. So the time commitment was so little in terms of real time, and yet there was a kind of commitment, a mindset commitment in some ways that helped kind of elevate all of us, I felt, in a different way than otherwise would come from a conversation or something like that. And there was an accountability. There was this commitment to each other. And we learned, I think, through the process to listen deeply, not only to the question on the surface, but also what we might be able to contribute. I felt like I was listening to each of the quandaries with an eye towards, or an ear towards, how could I help or serve in a way that may not be the same as everyone else. So I was sort of reaching down as I was listening, reaching down into myself to find what in my own experience or in my own life might be able to help. And this is really different than giving kind of advice that is pedantic or comes from this sort of source of lots of books being read or so on. Not that books weren't shared or advice from pieces of other knowledge or whatever it is wasn't shared as well, but there it was all filtered through our own personal experience, and that felt really unique. And there was also this kind of collective intelligence that I felt was being born out of us all showing up for each other each week. So we got the benefit of so many diverse perspectives, but also there was some kind of, at the same time that there was this diversity, there was also, it felt for me, like a convergence of some themes that came out, of things that matter to all of us as creative people trying to struggle through our various quandaries. And so there were both this feeling of like, wow, each of us are dealing with such different types of projects. And then on the other hand, there were themes that emerged, something like trusting in ourselves or something like, you know, dealing with our own insecurities and how do we think about our projects and how do we put ourselves out there and so on. So there was, it was just really interesting to see how those themes just emerged spontaneously. I also felt like time really mattered, the fact that it was not just weekly with this small amount of time that we would actually provide our information or experience, but yet slowly we got to know each other and kind of there was this fun kind of predicting almost the types of responses I would get from some people. So I knew that I would get, you know, from some people this kind of warm emotional support, from others I'd get a quirky response, from others it was like this deeply intellectualized historical advice. It was both unpredictable, and yet there were these kind of characters that we also showed up as that I felt was really fun and unpredictable. And I just, one of the things that I found incredibly moving was, I guess, my own personal development through it, because I increasingly started to trust that I had something valuable to share, that my experience, as mundane as it sometimes feels, or as, just oftentimes I would just wonder, is there anything that I can offer? And it turned out with every single quandary that I felt like there was something I could share and help and serve and show up for. And so there was this increasing sense that of self-trust in my own experience that I think I'm going to take away from this experiment, and stayed with me. This kind of feeling of being valued by others. So I also kind of left with a sense that we all seem to have bonded in this unpredictable way. And that kind of emergent sense of collective intelligence it couldn't have been planned. It couldn't have had this like really predetermined path. And yet again, I guess because we also all showed up with different moods sometimes, and we shared those moods sometimes. We shared our insecurities about not having anything valuable to contribute, and yet inevitably, every single quandary had this seven people just contributing in just wildly, wonderfully unique, important ways. Yeah, so I think that's mostly what I wanted to say about this, and I probably went on far, far too long, but I just am so grateful to every one of the people that was in the clinic, and I would really recommend anyone else who's listening to this to try it with a group of people, and maybe kind of counterintuitively, I would suggest anybody that does try something like this to invite people that you know, but also people that you may not know as well, and people that have really different backgrounds and projects or whatever the focus might be, because what I felt was just so obviously emergent, some insight that was obviously emergent, was this sense that although we are all so very, very different, there are many, many ways in which our own experiences can help other people. And that just is such a remarkable place to get to after this kind of experience. So yeah, I'm really deeply grateful. I hope others try the same experiment. And if you do, I would love, and I'm sure everyone else in this clinic would love to hear from you if you do try the experiment out. So thank you very much. I am very sorry. As usual, many of my messages would end with, oh my God, I can't believe I've gone on for so long. 15 minutes. I didn't think I had 3 minutes to share, but there you go. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope to hear back from others. Hello, it's Isabella again, and after already going on for so very long, I listened to Brian's introduction, and I wanted to add one more small experience of mine, or one reflection of mine, specifically on the point that he makes that these audio experiments, as he said, are like letters in some ways, for all the reasons that he gave. And I wanted to add two other ways in which they are, or they seem like a new art form or another form of expression. The first is that it feels to me like these audio experiments are sort of a new form of social memoir, in the same way that Montaigne sort of invented the memoir essay kind of form with his things like How to Live and so on. This feels, the Creative Quandary Clinic and the affordances it provided to share one's own learning experiences with others, but also to discover them for ourselves, felt like a new form of this type of learning memoir. And it was like talking about oneself so as to create this kind of vivid mirror that's not only useful for self-discovery, as Brian mentioned, but also it serves as a kind of potential mirror for other people. And certainly it provided that for the other members of the Creative Quandary Clinic. But I also wonder if these kinds of experiments are ever then publicly shared, they might be able to provide that kind of mirror for humanity, maybe, I guess. And again, this feels like almost a new type of communication form. And the second way I felt like it was something new is that it was actually, I know this is going to sound like I'm going a little over the top here, but it does feel a little like a new art form. So the vessel itself, the container of the audio experiments, or call them epistolaries or little pods of some sort, these audio experiments themselves feel more than just the letters of a new sort. They also feel like this new art form, in the sense of the way that Susan Sontag talks about art as a form of consciousness, right? it's a real-time, lived, embodied understanding that's dynamic in that it's changes, that it's changing over time, in real time as one leaves something in there and has insights about something that's happening, but also over time with your social partners. And that feels like a new form of art.
Hello, I'm Rick Benja. I'm a writer and community organizer. I've been involved with small creative practice groups for, well, since 2010, typically book club and writers club format. And then more recently, during the pandemic and onwards, sort of these more diffuse groups of dozens or hundreds of people in a Discord server or group chat. I'd say that my expectation, in retrospect, my expectation of the Creative Quandary Clinic was that the experience would fall on one of two sides of a coin for me. So either it would feel, would have felt small enough with a rhythm and a frequency, a level of commitment and input and attention from each of the participants, by which, you know, we would really affect or be in contact with the actual works that each of us were doing at the time. So something like either it would have this density of energy and attention and commitment that would allow it to help our creative practice directly, or it would be a group that allowed for some connection and sharing of ideas, sharing of sharing of a sense of practice and worldview without necessarily getting in touch with being able to get in touch with, you know, the individual practice of each person, not quite having that focus to satisfy that. I suppose that's how I think groups tend to one of those two when it comes to, you know, these creative practice groups. And the delightful surprise of the Creative Quandary Clinic was that it didn't fall neatly onto one of these sides for me. I had the experience of feeling a deeper connection and sense of solidarity than I expected, I had the sense of a great potential for this format also being useful for practice. And so I don't exactly know how or why, but I will venture some guesses. I think the intimacy of voice, certainly is, there's something there. Like when you hear somebody give advice in their own voice and context, there's a richness to it that offers you a sense of their worldview, a sense of, you know, that they're, what they're saying and what they're leaving out becomes clear. Something like their sense of taste and discretion becomes a bit more clear as you hear voice notes from them over the weeks and their responses to different questions. You start to triangulate a sense of this person and their own practice. And then, of course, when you hear their own question, it sort of grounds this in where they are right now in the ebbs and flows of their own creative work. So there's this. There's this sweet spot of effort to pay off with this format that Brian came up with. On the weeks where, you know, your actual weekly commitment is quite low, If it's a busy week with 5 to 30 minutes, you can deliver a voice note in response to someone in the group. And then on your week where you ask a question, you know, it's more involved, but great. Like, it's more involved because you're interfacing with this group of people and receiving this, you know, collective feedback. So it had this ability to sort of, you could scale up or scale down your commitment on a week-by-week basis, which I found really wonderful. I think the fear, well, my fear or anxiety with these groups is that I want to, when I commit to helping someone with a creative work, like, that's quite, tends to be quite a high bar for me. Like, I want to take the time to understand them and read their work, understand where it's intending to go. And of course, this doesn't scale very well at all. And it particularly doesn't scale when you're in a patch of life where, you know, your schedule is a bit hard to predict or a bit, you know, pressed or stretched, which mine has been recently. So, yeah, and this group, it did not feel like that. There were weeks where I didn't respond on time, but I had grown a sense of trust that the person asking the question would get 4 or 5 answers that day. The times where I felt like I could only offer a small piece of advice or insight that was incomplete, well, I didn't feel like I needed to be complete because I knew that there would be a handful of perspectives from different people. And so the emphasis became more on just highlighting what felt instinctively true or true of my experience, knowing that, like, it would be rounded out by the experiences of others. And then on weeks when I wanted to dive in a little more, I mean, I did have weeks where I, let's say I was more on schedule. So I considered the person's question, I reflected on it over that day, I delivered something pretty comprehensive, or in my estimation, on that day. I listened to the responses of others on that day and what have you. There were other times when I was, like, out of sync, but the rhythm of the group kind of carried and I was able to catch up and do that. Yeah, feel involved and also catch up at my own pace, which was beautiful. My question was an interesting, well, interesting to me in the sense that it was a question for which I didn't really expect good responses. And that's because, my question had to do with self-suppression and feeling particularly out of touch with my, let's say, creative animal at the time and the week when it fell to me. And I didn't expect good answers because I felt the answer was to just do it. Just get back to writing. And it wasn't a conceptual problem. It wasn't anything like this. And so, yeah, the answer was get back to writing. And I had some constraints in my life at that time where, you know, I couldn't really give much time to writing, or it felt like I couldn't, and the stakes were high. And so it really felt like this conundrum where, you know, I'm asking a question where I'm like, yeah, I know the answers. Oh, I'm demotivated anyway. But what came back was just such beautiful nuance, recognition of the, like, the paradox of this problem, as well as the areas where I might be, you know, slightly dodging, a great sensitivity and range of experience. And I honestly experienced a huge swell of solidarity in listening to these responses, an ability to take, like, a kinder and more pragmatic perspective with myself. A few of the examples and the exercises, as spoken by other people and suggested by other people, now that I knew them a little bit and had the context, they sort of lit me up with a sense of wanting to give them a go. A specific example was, a particular creative exercise of Dorothea Brand's, like returning to this. And, it was so very different from me jumping on the internet, reading a bunch of The Art of Fiction interviews, or returning to the Dorothea Brand's How to Be a Writer, and finding that myself, versus finding that in connection with the others, where they had a sense of what I was going through and a sense of what might feel good, and the suggestion actually did feel good, and experiencing like a movement towards that. So, yeah, this was my experience. If I had to sort of summarize it, I think there is some sweet spot of dynamic level of input with a low weekly commitment, and a high level of intimacy, nuance, sort of collective support and solidarity. And that combination is really fruitful. I feel like that can provide this sort of perhaps this garden bed of enough connection, collision, serendipity, energy, commitment, for people to stay engaged, and for people to stay engaged with actually knowing what each other is working on, having a real sense of their progress in it. It provides this kind of garden bed at a relatively low input. So it's a much easier lift than a weekly Zoom call synchronizing all people from all sides of the world. It's a much easier lift than committing to reviewing a piece of work, technically reviewing a piece of creative work on a weekly basis. So I feel very grateful for this. I think Brian designed something both by, careful design and his attention and practice and experimentation in this area for a long time, as well as by a sense of intuition or curation for people and what have you. Ultimately, something that has this delightful sweet spot of allowing for both inspiration and connection and solidarity, as well as being in touch with the real, in the moment, creative problems and practices of people in the group. And I'm really excited for other people trying this format, for us doing a round two. We're all going to do a round two of this as a group. We felt its value and a desire to continue. So, yeah, I think it's a remarkably promising promising format. And, I would say of my personal experience, despite it being an 8-week period in which I had comparatively a relatively low amount of bandwidth to give to other people's works, a low amount of bandwidth to give to my own creative practice, I ended up with a small amount of commitment, receiving a huge payload of feeling of solidarity, feeling of renewed connection with my creative animal and creative practice, a sense of connection with the creative practices of others. And I felt a real promise in, what we look for in these creative practice groups is something like a garden bed, something like a fertile ground, that allows us to stay closer to process and closer to motion, and also allows for the seasonality of our creative practice. So I think there's something beautiful to explore here, and I'm really excited for the next experiments. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Olga. Here are my reflections on how this went. My history of communication online goes back to the early 2000s, starting from, even late 90s, starting mostly from IRC, then gaming forums, stuff like, bulletin boards, something awful, Reddit, places like that. So initially mostly text-based. Then I also, like everybody else at the time, tried ICQ, AIM, MSN Messenger. And then I never liked the instant messengers. They always really stressed me out. Facebook for a while, still use it, to be honest. I love Facebook. And then about 2021, I started using Clubhouse, which is an audio chat app, which I'm still using. So this is over 20 years of communication one way or another with some amount of audio chat. And the experiment that we did as a group stands out to me. It has unique properties. I think that here's why they worked for me. I am quite socially awkward, and it used to be the case that because I didn't know what to say in any environment, I would substitute conversation with like trivia. I would talk about just interesting facts, because what else do you do, right? I don't know how banter works. I'm incapable of it, apparently. And so I would always get very nervous around people. That's always also why I was nervous on instant messengers. Pretty much anything like that. And the last few years, I've been living a relatively hermetic life. I see very few people, although these days I go through intense meetings and sort of person-to-person schedules, I suppose, but that's unusual. My default state is to see nobody and hear nobody. And the experiment that we did, then the fact that everybody had a question that they brought with them, that was already a very good start. They had a concrete thing that they wanted to talk about, and it was important to them. So for one thing, I think there was like a very basic desire to provide a valuable input on something after having thought about it. Because what's the point of engaging if you're not providing something informationally nutritious? So that was a very good start. You're given a subject and somebody cares. And you, with whatever wisdom you have gathered in your life, whatever skills you've accumulated, you are putting all of that to use and trying to zero in on something that somebody cares about. That means that there is no fluff. That is, then, again, to me, it's partly a question of density. That's good. Per word, everything was important. Everything was valuable. Every minute held weight. So I think that's a pretty major thing. I don't like to waste time. And that was, on a kind of just like a basic level, quite satisfying. But although I said there was no fluff, people did leave in also lots of little details that were not necessarily, hard concepts or whatever. They would also talk about their lives. And that's not fluff, but it is something that I've struggled with. So for me, this was appreciated, because then not only do I hear what people think on a specific subject, but often they will weave in something that they live, something that is happening for them right now or has happened to them in the past. And to me, this is also very appreciated, because you're basically striking a very good ground between something abstract and something very much lived. So I liked that a lot, because again, high density of information, but also the personal connection, the gift of hearing intimate details of somebody's life that I would not be able to find anywhere else and that I would not think to ask for. I think this is a very good combination because I want everything to be passionate. I want abstractions made hot-blooded or something. I want them to be real, but also they're little windows into people's lives because it is not always easy to open up about things. Or rather, I don't even think it's exactly that. I think that, like, personally, I never know what is relevant. What might people want to know about me? And it's a question I don't even ask. Like, I recently realized I'm very bad at talking about myself. I can talk about the things that I love forever, but talking about myself is vaguely uncomfortable. Whereas here, the way that the questions were asked and how we all answered them, people would bring that what was relevant. And that, again, I feel like that was an organic way of sharing something about yourself and allowing others to get to know you by. So again, you know, this bypasses the whole nightmare of small talk and also bypasses magically the fear of, you know, deepities or something like that. And I think that, again, this is very valuable. It is, to me, quite art-like in that sense, where it's a mixture of the artificial and the organic or something like that. I really like that. So partly, again, I very rarely talk about myself anymore, and I feel like the more time passes, the less I do that. But because I'm quite hermetic, I don't even hear other people doing that anymore. And that's the thing. I hadn't realized that that's something I would even like. I'm after moving to Austria, which is where I am now, I voluntarily cut myself away from everyone and everything. I would go to work and I would speak to people at work or whatever. And I'd come back and I would do a lot of work and I would never go out and I didn't see people. And all I really did was just like work on the stuff that I cared about, which was the right choice for me. Still is. I'm glad I did that. But this effort of focusing on that which I thought was important robbed me of the sensation of what it's like to get to know people. I've been to like one party in the last 3 years, or maybe two, I don't remember. I no longer remember what it is like to get to know people. I've literally forgotten. And when something like that happens voluntarily, when you choose to do that, I think that you aren't even aware exactly of what you're choosing to remove from your life. So that was the unexpected thing for me. I wouldn't have predicted that I missed getting to know people. I'm sure I might have said something like that, but I think I wouldn't have predicted anything about how it actually felt. Turns out it's nice. So that was a kind of nourishment. It was a, you know, a type of hunger or something like that, which I'd sustained without realizing and was now satisfying to at least some extent. And this is markedly different to any of the types of communication that I mentioned earlier. It is not like bulletin boards. It is not like subreddits. It's not even like Clubhouse, which is an audio chat app. But Clubhouse, you do develop friendships, and I have done that, and I'm very grateful for them. But due to the nature of the app, you, like, most of it is bullshitting because it's difficult to sustain a deep conversation because it's unplanned. You don't know when people are going to come and go. You're in different time zones, which meant that really there was a lot of dilution in terms of what you might say to others about yourself or whatever. A lot of the time people would never say anything about themselves. So you'd get the voice, but you wouldn't get the intensity, the intentionality. And that is what we got here. I think it really helps that people brought with them sincerity, that whatever they said, you could assume that it was not, it was nothing to do with how they wanted to appear. It was really their best effort at communicating what they felt and how they thought. Not that I mean, I can't say I'm especially paranoid about sincerity from others anyway. Like I rarely think that, oh, perhaps they did not mean what they said because that's just offensive. But I do worry a little bit about my own sincerity in the sense that I kind of have too much. I don't know when to stop, etc. And so it was a pleasure to hear other people being very direct about how they reacted to anything. But also it was a pleasure to just be open and honest. So yeah, I wouldn't have expected for this experience to be as rewarding as it was. I would like to take part in the future. I would like to get to know both this group better, but also potentially other people. And it's funny, I don't actually like asynchronous communication that much. One of the things that I do like about Clubhouse is that it's the people who use it, they use it mostly for live communication. Nevertheless, I think that it is the fact that you return to it, the fact that it is not just like a one-off chat or whatever, but there is a theme, and the fact that it lasts over a certain period of time, I think that this punctuates life in a way that it is sustainable, but also a bit like a long, you know, a good novel or something like that. It's something that spans time and also touches different facets over time. So yes, big surprise. If you, you know, if Brian hadn't reached out and asked if I might be interested, I don't think it would have occurred to me to do such a thing. I think I would heartily recommend it to basically anyone that I know. I don't really know how I'd approach it, but I think it's valuable. And really, we've only really scratched the surface. Oh yeah, and another thing that just comes to mind was that I really liked some of the soundscapes that we got. Like, I remember Catherine's, you know, like, you hear, like, trains? You know, different traffic, were there horses? There was just, like, stuff happening. And, you know, it was a little bit like, I am closer to aphantasia than I am to hyperphantasia. But even so, it was a little bit like, you know, being in a cartoon or something and, you know, listening to her do it. Like, you could almost hear these things going past her and her going past them. And it was just really fun. And on a similar subject, I suppose, small things like the flavor of people's accents and dialects. Isn't that lovely, right? You hear somebody speak over and over again, and you develop a sense of what they sound like because your attention is there. And I think that it is in slightly greater focus even than knowing somebody personally. And yeah, honestly, because I also met up with Cecile after having heard her speak a bunch of times. And it was a very strange but lovely pleasure of meeting and seeing somebody's face after hearing their voice. That doesn't normally happen. Normally you see their face first, then you hear their voice. Cool. I just didn't think it'd be so much fun. So thanks a lot. Made me happier. Made me feel less alone. Didn't realize I even felt especially alone. I felt connected to other people in a way that the internet does not tend to do. Thank you all.
Hello, my name is Catherine. I live in Austin, Texas, and I participated in the Creative Quandary Clinic in the fall and winter of 2023 into early 2024. I loved this experience. To me, this experience felt like a delightful series of pen pals, from, you know, just missives, dispatches from afar that would drop in to my life once a week, every week for however many weeks it was, 8, I think. And it was so beautiful because I am, you know, my life is busy. It is full. It's quite fortunately filled with a lot of creative things, but in large part, the creative collaborators and communities that I'm a part of now, ever since 2020 and the pandemic, tend to be very dispersed, geographically diffuse. And this group was as well. And although it didn't solve for the creative community in place question that seems to be a really keen one for many of us, what it did do was provide this really beautiful space for thinking, for reflection, thinking contemplatively about creativity in our life and also being put to use. I think in this day and age, it is hard enough to find people to collaborate with, much less people who can just offer you tangible, concrete support in the moment, but also to feel of use to others. And I think that is one part I am thinking very much in my life and work right now about what it means to be human and what are the important, unique, or even if not unique, the really essential elements for just flourishing and well-being in our individual bodies and as collectives. And one thing that I do know is very psychologically and spiritually vital for us is this sense of being of use to each other. And so every week someone would send, we'd get a lovely voice note from somebody else in the group about a quandary they were facing. And I thought that these were going to be creative problem solving on a really tactical level. I had a beautiful experience last summer where a woman who's now become a friend brought a challenge to a group of us and said, okay, I'm writing, I have this idea of a script or a screenplay in my mind. Here's the story. Can you offer me advice on it? And that kind of, you know, watching everyone jump in from an anthropological lens, a filmography lens, a psychology lens was really beautiful. I expected this would be more of the same. And actually what kind of emerged in the group over time was much more this kind of open-ended, existential but very vital questions of creativity. People asking about rhythms of life, about audience, about what it means to make work and have it be accepted or not accepted or responded to, what exploitation means, what belonging means, what intuition means. And it got very conceptual very quickly, which I actually loved. But I think my favorite part of that was it was emergent. I would have found use in this group if it had been tactile and if it had gone full conceptual, you know, either vector or any vector really. And so the emergence of this sort of pattern in the way that we were thinking was really interesting to witness and very special. My question is kind of an example of that, the question I sent. My week was right around Christmas. It was definitely over the holidays. I was home with family. In a rare, possibly once-in-a-lifetime moment, I was sharing a house with all of my adult siblings, spouses, children, and my parents all in one home for almost a full week, which was just an enormous amount of people in one space, especially people most of whom are related to each other. And so I had a really, you know, angsty question about execution that I was working on this thing and I was experiencing a lot of doubt and a lot of angst. And that was really the kind of just how do you fucking ship a thing in the world, you know? And I had this sort of question that I really wanted to ask people for that was tactical help. And it just felt clenched. It felt desperate in a way that didn't actually feel right for the spirit of the group. And so instead I asked the other question, which was about seasonality, which was how do you embrace or think about seasonality in your creative work? Can you anticipate when you're about to move into a different season? How much can you control that? How much do you feel at the mercy of where life will take you? And what's interesting is this group, we're all similar in that we are really prioritize or try long to prioritize creative collaboration, following our curiosity, what feels vital and important in our soul and our minds, and then doing that with others as well. But other than that, we live all over the world. We're all different ages. Some are married, some have children. Some are responsible for others in other capacities. We all have very different professions. Some of us work 9-to-5 jobs, some of us don't. And so it was interesting to, although we are very common in some very key elements, we're also quite diverse in terms of some of the more expected demographics. And so it was interesting to ask this question of seasonality and just hear how people responded to it, what their theories or their own practices were for embracing a change in creative rhythm, learning how to anticipate and how you just have to let go. And, you know, whether it's a dedicated practice of it doesn't matter how you're feeling, you show up every morning, or if it's a much more sort of permissive, responsive practice of this is where my body and my life and the relationships and those I love in life are right now, and I have to show up accordingly, you know? And so I think in some ways, even though I expected it to be more outcomes and execution oriented, the fact that this group allowed for a space where I could just say, guys, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not on the roadmap I thought I had for myself at all. In some ways that feels fine. In some ways that feels scary and wrong, but can we talk about seasons and just know that it would be met with beautiful, reflective answers was really lovely. I loved the degree to which people got personal quite quickly, but also towed this beautiful tension between sharing of their own life and their own examples, but giving a lot of space to the question asker. Yeah, in some, I think this experience was really lovely. Some people I knew before going in, others I had heard of or we've interacted online, but never voice to voice before, and others were totally new to me. So it was just this beautiful collection of people. And I just am really grateful for, you know, it was a season in its own way. I'm grateful for this moment, this low lift rhythmic moment every week where just something would drop in and I'd have a week or a day to think about it and try to respond and know that it was in service of somebody else and supporting somebody else's creative practice was just a really beautiful communion that we had. So huge thanks to Brian for pulling this together, and I'm excited for what comes out of this.
Hello, this is Lee Biddlecombe recording, and I always have a hard time introducing myself and what I do, but I'll just say that I live in Europe. I'm based in Italy at the moment, spending more time in Berlin as the year goes on. I write. I do a mix of copywriting and translations and my own essays and sort of cultural commentary pieces. I'm also really interested in getting into more curation and work with dancers as a dramaturge, so working with choreographers and considering curating work in heritage spaces, which is something that I, in a previous life, did a dissertation on. So I actually find this really difficult to verbally convey what the experience was like in the Creative Quandary Clinic, because I looked back at some of my notes in an effort to kind of jog my memory of the highlights or what I thought was most important to convey about the experience. And it was almost as if it had come from a different moment in time, even though it was only a couple of months ago. And I realized that that was because it was just me typing out notes on my own as a kind of aide-mémoire, and it wasn't connected to the wonderful people that were part of it. And so I was thinking, actually, the beauty of this experiment was 100% in the people that were part of it and hearing their voices and their all the tonality that comes through when people leave voice messages in a contemplative, reflective, or excited, or whatever the mood was in the moment of recording, all of that comes through straight away. So immediately you're brought into such an intimate and really, I don't know, like a deepest space of kind of friendship and collegiality that I have never experienced in this way in such a short time with a group of people in which I think I only knew maybe half going in. And so the words that I took in terms of notes on different weeks and things that it prompted me to think of didn't capture the kind of emotional resonance of what it was actually like to hear people's questions and hear people grappling with their most difficult and knotty problems and existential, questions, issues, quandaries. So it was about that, but also the then like ability to respond and feel like you might actually have something to say on that subject. And it was amazing to me how every week I was kind of expecting at some point or another to get to a point where, maybe I don't have anything to say to this question, but every single week there was something that touched that struck a chord somehow inside me, either because I had directly experienced the same frustrations or question in relation to creative work or creative collaboration, or because it reminded me of something that I hadn't thought of in a long time, but that I needed to go back to, or just like offered up this whole new way of articulating something that I would have never necessarily shared with anyone else. And then all of a sudden there was this like incredible supportive group of people that were all responding. And immediately, even if it wasn't your question that you were, that happened that week, if you were just responding, it was this experience of feeling immediately less alone and hearing everybody else's responses to that question. And I think a lot of chat gets, you know, thrown out about creating communities and what is a community, etc. And then the word gets overused all the time. And for me, this was like the actual felt, lived, intellectually processed experience of being in a community for those weeks, and still going forward, I still feel this connection to everybody there, even if we're not in daily contact in this kind of break period. So I don't know if there's anything else to say at this point, but mostly want to just say, I don't know, that I would encourage anyone who feels like, gosh, I think I want to do this, and maybe I only know one person that would want to do it with me, do it. And then ask that person to invite one other person. I think it was the perfect number. I loved having the 8 people, and I could also imagine it being really interesting even with a smaller group. So mostly just grateful that it's going to keep going and that we get to go deeper and experience this next round, which is going to have a slightly different format. And I am already like feeling this sense of relief at the prospect of it starting back up again, and just like this sense of stability and anchoring that it provided, that I realized I've been a little bit floating in the last month or two since we took a break. So yeah, really, really looking forward to it starting again and to see how this might spin out and evolve in different ways, and how I might continue to spend time with the people that I've met through this, if and when I'm ever in their cities. So I'll leave it there, and thank you to everyone in this and to Brian.
Hi, my name's Cecile Embleton, and I am a documentary director based in London, and I was part of the Creative Quandary experiment set up by Brian. And I would say, apart from it being a really amazing experience in terms of learning so much about myself and everybody in the group, which was such a joy, I've thought about it, and there are 3 kind of main things that stand out for me as being significant from the experience for me. And the first one, I think, that was quite, was probably only me in the group, only applied to me, was the fact that I didn't know anyone apart from Brian. And that really made me realize how often I can maybe have a preconceived idea about somebody when I meet them, and that might shape, you know, what I decide to share with them or the way I decide to share. So I suddenly realized it was quite, in a way, quite daunting not knowing anybody else in the group. And I knew they were going to be really smart and really cool because they're Brian's friends. But in another way, it was very freeing, actually, to have that open space with no preconceived idea and no possibility of knowing, you know, that much about these people. So that was really, yeah, wonderful in that sense. And then the second one is that it was really an opportunity to connect in a way that allows for continuity and a depth of sharing that I think, well, I find personally in my life living in a big city is very rare. And I noticed that particularly when I moved back from, I lived in Galicia during the pandemic in northern Spain for 2 years. And when I came back to London, I realized, I got a big shock because I realized that lots of my connections, well, firstly, I had so many connections, so many more than in the small kind of unit that I had in Galicia during the pandemic, which I think was, you know, the experience for many people during that time. But it was heightened, I think, by the fact of being in the middle of nowhere out there and then coming back to a big city, and everything felt more fragmented and relationships didn't really have a continuity in the way that they had before. And so this group was a really beautiful opportunity to see how layers of connection and resonance grew over the weeks. And there was definitely something to be said about the depth of exploration, and each person giving their point of view and staying. It was very satisfying to stay on a focused on a particular question and see how much there is there to explore from each person's point of view. And it just kept, you know, going and going and unfolding like, you know, a huge onion. And that was fascinating. And I think the format of, it, everybody having an opportunity to share their quandary on a certain week and then people feeding back and the depth of exploration created a type of presence, you know, and real deep listening that is unusual, again, to the experience of city life. I don't think many people have that experience daily. You know, we spend most of our time rushing around. So that was something I really, really appreciated. And then the third one is quite simple, really. It was the feeling of being in a creative family. It can be very lonely doing creative work. And so, yeah, I'm really, really grateful for that feeling of, yeah, sharing together in a group. And I think it was made more poignant by the fact that our 8 weeks ran over Christmas and New Year. And so it felt special to be together during those times of, you know, ritual and being together. And, you know, when we tend to gather, it was really nice to have that separate, you know, new group where we'd gathered to share, you know, creative experiences, but also life in general and how we're feeling and what's going on. So, yeah, and then going over the threshold from 1 year to the next felt really special, and I hadn't really thought about it until it happened. And yeah, it felt great to be accompanied. So overall, super, super positive experience, and it left me thinking what could be possible in other groups. And it, you know, it's not necessary to know each other, actually. And you think, wow, what could people discover or share together if they were to gather and use this format to discuss what's going on for them. So thank you, Brian. I appreciate you and everybody in the group. Okay, bye.
This is Brian Cam, and you've been listening to Clear Story. Since you've listened to the end of this episode, you're exactly the kind of person that I would love to hear from. So please visit briancam.com, where you can find links to my social media and other ways to contact me. If you would like to receive infrequent updates about my work, please subscribe at briancam.substack.com. If you're interested in supporting my work, please visit patreon.com/briancam, where I post everything that I'm working on. Both of those links are in the show notes, and I look forward to hearing from you.